The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 891. It's the 6th of October 2017. On the podcast today, I have Zaza Mamunashvili, President and Chief Executive Officer of Frontera Resources, that's FRR, and Zaza answers private investor questions on their oil and gas operations in Georgia. Also on the podcast, Marcus Engelbrecht, CEO of Stratex International, STI ticker there, and Marcus discusses the benefits of their proposed acquisition of Crusader Resources. Plus, I also have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: IG Design, that's IGR ticker, Somero, SOM ticker, and Medica, MGP. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Zaza Mamunashvili, President and Chief Executive Officer of Frontera Resources, that's FRR ticker. Zaza, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here in the air.
Now, we've had some questions sent through from private investors. We'll get to that in just a bit. But before we do that, Zaza, for people listening and they're not aware of what you do, or they're new to the podcast and, of course, new to investing, can you give them a brief summary as to what Frontera Resources is all about, please?
Sure, with pleasure. We are a European-focused oil and gas exploration and production company operating in low-cost onshore environment in the countries of Georgia and Moldova. Block 12 in Georgia is our main focus at the moment. We have very substantial CPR estimates in our license area, which is 9 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas and 1.7 billion barrels of recoverable oil. This is quite big. Also, there is a very well-developed oil and gas export and domestic pipeline infrastructure in place, which runs through our license area, through which currently we are selling our natural gas production at a very attractive regional gas prices, $7 per thousand cubic feet. This month, we'll be testing three gas-bearing intervals in Udobno 2 well. This well is located in Tsar Heavy gas complex and contains, this particular area contains 5.8 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas. At the same time, on the oil side, we are preparing to commence drilling of Dino 2 well in Taribani oil field. And with successful capital raise this week, now we are fully funded to drill this very important well. This is where we are.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's get to some of the questions here then, Zaza. So the first one is, what are the plans for Dino now that we are more than fully funded? Now, I like the word we. That's obviously a shareholder there. And explain a bit of background on Dino too, if you could as well.
Yes, this is a very interesting and very important well for us because we've drilled this well back in 2008, and we've drilled through a number of productive horizons, and we ended up with producing as called Zone 9, and now we have track record of producing this Zone 9 at a sustainable level for almost 9 years with good quality crude, with good production. And now with Dino 2, what we are planning to do, we will be sidetracking this existing the well, and we will be adding more productive horizons to produce and commingle it in future such that it will increase well productivity substantially. So this time we will be drilling zones 14 and 15, and we will commingle production of zones 9, 14, and 15, and we will increase Dino 2 well productivity this way.
Okay, all right. Next question is, do you have any intention to sell any shares as you now have over 1 billion, or are you holding these long-term for potential dividends, etc.?
not really. I don't have any intentions. By the way, though, we just spoke about Dino 2 well, which is in Taribani field. Mm-hmm. And the WH Ireland evaluated Taribani field, this asset, at $484 million. While incorporating zones 9, 14, and 15 only in this evaluation. And Once we commence this Dino 2 operation and we have more wells to come to be sidetracked, deepened, and then drilled, the valuation will increase substantially. So with time, once we embark on development of oil bearing intervals in Taribani, we will see multiples of $484 million. Nothing being said, deeper gas potential, which we have in Taribani field. So the long answer to the question, but no, I'm not going to sell any shares at the moment, even in future.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure shareholders are glad to hear that. Let's go to the next question, which is, what is the time scale for flow testing on UD2?
Yes, UD2, which is extremely important well for us. This is on natural gas side. We are proving up the substantial 9 trillion cubic feet of the recoverable gas in our license area. We are about to start testing those zones, and probably it will take maybe 4 or 5 weeks to properly test those intervals and then start selling it to the market. So I think 4 or 5 weeks is the reasonable time.
Okay. And last question here. Is it not a bit premature talking about pipeline planning, installation and production of UD2 before flow testing is complete?
Well, this is very obvious that we need to do the flow test and complete the testing in order to acquire all details and all parameters from the producing well. And once we complete this testing, we're going to know all about the volumes, pressure, content, and everything. But why we are working on the pipeline project right now, because look, the advantage is that we already secured the right of way. We already laid down the plan, the design. We are talking with a construction company, with companies procuring with pipes. So we are almost there to commence construction of the pipeline the minute we have all answers after we complete successful testing of UW2 well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Zaza, well, thanks for coming on, answering this question. So one thing left to do, if someone's listening to this and they like the sound of these answers, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Sure. A huge resource base in onshore low-cost setting, with perfectly developed infrastructure of oil and gas export and domestic pipelines, and with a very, very attractive regional gas prices at $7 per 1,000 cubic feet. We are about to prove 9 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas in October once we complete testing of UW2L. And lastly, after successfully established long-term production history from Zone 9 in Tari Valley oilfield, we will commence Dino 2 drilling operations in November and will commingle production zones of 9, 14, and 15, which will substantially increase single well productivity. And again, I mentioned before the valuation of $484 million given by WH Ireland might be substantially changed with time as we go with successful drilling and as we deliver successful production results as we go.
Excellent stuff. Zaza, good to chat to you, and sounds like you've got a busy period ahead of you, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Marcus Engelbrecht, CEO of Stratex International. That's STI ticker. Marcus, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin. It's good to be here.
Now, we've had an update on the requisition and a bit more detail you've announced, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we get into that, Marcus, for anyone listening right now, not quite sure as to what you do at Stratex, can you give them a brief summary as to what it's all about, please?
Yes, Justin, Stratex is an AIM-listed early-stage explorer. We have assets in East and West Africa, primarily. We're looking to do a merger with Crusader Resources. That's an Australian-listed company with some really top-notch exploration projects in Brazil.
Okay, great stuff, Marcus. And yesterday you announced via an RNS the notice of a general meeting and posting of a circular to shareholders, and the board's recommendation is to vote against all resolutions made by the requisition party. Can you explain the requisition party and why they're calling for a requisition, please, Marcus?
Yes, Justin. We've put out an announcement and we've posted a circular and a presentation to shareholders. The requisition effectively wants to make some board changes and to reject the Crusader merger that we've proposed. Well, the board unanimously recommends that shareholders vote against all the resolutions to be proposed, and primarily for the following reasons. The acquisition that we're proposing will be a transformative one for Stratix and offering a clear path to cash flow. All our analysis indicates that the assets within Crusader are significantly undervalued when compared to Northern Hemisphere listed companies. And we think that there's a significant potential for value uplift. The acquisition is also firmly in line with the company's stated strategy of looking to develop a project pipeline from early stage right through to development and then to cash flow.
Okay, and so why aren't the requisite shareholders seeing this value in Crusader then, Marcus?
Well, I suspect on one side, we haven't communicated effectively on exactly what the value uplift is. And we've remedied that through a number of announcements over the last several weeks, and also very much in the announcement and the presentation that's attached to that, and it's also on our website. And I'll urge potential investors and shareholders to actually look at the website, look at that presentation, and see that by doing this merger and this transaction, we can differentiate ourselves from our peers, who admittedly are struggling to attract attention as we were in our current form.
Yeah, and so Crusader, there has what? Is that right? They've got three gold assets. Is that correct?
That's right. Look, they've got three great assets in Brazil. One of them is called Borborema. That's relatively close to a decision to construct a mine. The other one is Juruena. Mm-hmm. It's had some bonanza-style intercepts. Really great exploration potential. And the other one is Nova Astra. That's adjacent to Juruena. It's in the same belt. And a lot of majors are showing a lot of interest in that area as well. So we think all three projects can add significant value for us.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Marcus, if someone's listening to this right now and they like the action that's happening here and the road you're headed down, but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
We have a strong management team, a team that's delivered value uplift in both exploration and on the operating side. We have and will develop an exciting portfolio of exploration assets. And probably most importantly of all is really taking all of those assets up the value curve and delivering significant value to shareholders.
Marcus, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
You're not too bad. I mean, I haven't spoken for a couple
Good.
Of weeks.
We had
a...
I've been on the road and we kept missing each other, so sorry about that. So
I like
it's all
that,
down
yeah.
to me.
On the road with your AJ Bell band and all the classics coming out.
Yes, worries of the information age that we are now. We were trotting around the UK, so...
Excellent stuff. Well, I mean, before we go into specific stocks, Russ, I mean, at the moment, you know, what is the burning macro issues out there? What are people are chatting about?
Well, when I'm seeing financial advisors or when I'm doing some of my other media work, I think the things that probably come up, the big one for the financial advisors is it's all looking so good. Mm-hmm. You know, what is going to go wrong? Because, you know, like any good financial advisor, they don't want to just help their clients grow their wealth. They want to help them protect it on the downside at the same time.
Yeah.
So people are constantly looking about, you know, just what could be the surprise thing.
What are they?
That comes out of the clouds. Well, I mean... I mean, the things that people are most worried about, that they're most worried about China, and is there going to be a sudden slowing down after the 19th Party Congress at the end of the month once they've negotiated their way through that? Mm-hmm. People are worried about whether the Bank of England is going to start jacking up interest rates, what's going to happen if and when the Fed starts doing quantitative tightening, which in theory it's going to do as of this month and begins to withdraw monetary stimulus, and particularly if the European Central Bank starts to slow things down as well next year. So I think still the role of central banks is seen as key. China, because there's very limited visibility for us over here in the West, and it's clearly, you know, the world's second biggest economy. Mm-hmm. And then it's still, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, if there is going to be something out of left field, you know, is it going to be actually an inflationary surprise that means that central banks are behind the curve? You know, there are just one or two signs not many. I mean, what caught my eye yesterday was there was a Japanese beer company, Asahi, just putting through its first price increase in 10 years, believe it or not, which was interesting. Netflix put through a price increase yesterday. So you are starting to see some, you know, so, and obviously we've seen this after the Monarch, you know, shamble, disaster. We've got, you know, short-term increases in airfares. So you are seeing some inflationary pockets. Equally, we're not seeing wage growth accelerating yet by any means. And there are still some powerful deflationary forces out there in terms of global indebtedness, which is still going up, and in terms of Western demographics, which is still very unhelpful. As populations get older, the tax earning base is shrinking. So in that respect, there's still a huge deflationary gravitational force on one side, and on the other, you got the inflationary forces of probably corporate underinvestment and central banks doing their best to create inflation through monetary stimulus. So in some ways, the most difficult job for financial advisors is you're faced with several different end games, which actually require different portfolio structures to get safely from one side to the other, and nobody knows which one's coming. So I think that's probably exercising people as much as anything else. And, you know, when you've seen such a sustained period of low volatility, you know, the VIX at around 10, mm-hmm. and it's been down here now for quite some time. I mean, the last time we had these sustained periods of low volatility, the 1996, 97 was pretty quickly followed by the Asian crisis and the Russian debt default. And 2006, 7, well, you know, we all know what came then,
don't we?
So in that respect, I think people are worried that it just looks so good that can it really, really be that good? And I think that's probably what's exercising people at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday, I think the US stock market hit record highs. And
It did. Again, you see, it's one of those things that resonates. I think the S&P 500 set six consecutive record highs. Mm-hmm. The last time it did that was 1997, and within a few months, the Asian debt crisis had started.
Yeah.
So again, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things when people are thinking, you know, is it really, really that good out there when there are still some big challenges? And I think that's what's probably got, you know, obviously everybody's happy to ride it, but I think, you know, people are starting to think, is it, you know, and, you know, the feedback is clients are getting excited. They're almost inching towards taking more risk.
Yeah.
Because they're frightened of missing out, when if anything, advisors are starting to maybe think we should be going the other way and taking less risk, because, you know, when things look this easy, that's when accidents can start to happen.
I'll ask you a question. I got this morning, and I do the five things you need to know in the mornings kind of thing, and the thing that was being talked about a lot was Grant Sharpe's, which is ex-Conservative Party chairman, drawn up this list of people, cabinet ministers and backbenchers who want to oust Theresa May. I mean, do you think that would have a bit of volatility on the markets or not, if Theresa May was ousted?
I think it would certainly add volatility to the currency markets. I mean, again, with central banks deciding that they and they alone can set the price of money and try and control interest rates, I think, generally speaking, people are currently expressing their opinion. They'd normally perhaps do it through bond yields, but that's difficult with central banks intervening. And so really it's currencies that the markets are using to express their opinions right now. Mm-hmm. So I guess you get a bout of volatility in sterling. But then, as we've seen over the last 18 months, pound down, FTSE 100 up has been a pretty straightforward trade. So in that respect, if the pound went through the floor, would it necessarily affect equities that badly in the short term?
Not sure
it would. Depends, obviously, then who takes over.
Exactly.
What their policies are. Short term.
It's almost like saying, when you see a CEO leave a company sometimes and the share price rallies on that, will it be the same for Theresa May, you know?
Well, it's not beyond the realms. I guess it depends who takes over.
But
in the end, clearly Theresa May has got some relatively interventionist policies. You know, she's talking about energy caps and she's looking to, you know, intervene in the housing market with, I guess, short term possible, long run, it's profits and cash flow that drive valuations. Politicians last 4 to 8 years, tops in the top job. You know, we all know that an equity investment is really for keeps. So in that respect, it's a very short period of time. But yeah, it can certainly create volatility in the short term. Yes, of that, there's no doubt, potentially.
Okay, let's get on to the three stocks you're looking at, dates and stuff. And first one is IG Design, is it?
IG Design, yeah. It used to be known as International Greetings. There's that old joke about you should never, you know, pick a company that's changed its name because it's bad luck, just like the Royal Navy never changed the name of a ship that it captured because it was bad luck. But this one at the moment looks to be working out fine. And it's a manufacturer of greetings cards and gift wrap. which doesn't sound desperately exciting.
Yeah.
But over the last 4 years, pre-tax profits have gone from 7 to 16 million. Earnings per share have gone from 8 pence to 18p, and it's gone from net debt to net cash. So it's clearly doing something right. It sells around the world, big markets, you know, the UK and the US, and it's making, and it's particularly selling into the discounters, the B&M European retails.
Okay.
I guess Walmart, some of the more price sensitive retailers, and I think that's really become the niche of the company's niche. It's invested heavily in state-of-the-art plant in the UK and Holland and Asia. So again, it's got very cost-efficient facilities, and you're getting at the moment, you know, some really good, solid trend earnings growth out of the company. Not as cheap as it was, in about 17 times earnings, 15 times earnings. Little yield, about 1.5%, but earnings growth looks pretty consistent. It's been double-digit, and I guess it just really initially caught my eye because of Card Factory, which is a stock that we've discussed. Actually, I think the first podcast that we did together, we discussed, and that dished out a very mixed set of first halves the other week, and sent out mixed messages on the special dividend, which had been a real call for that stock, although it's still up nicely since we first talked about it. And one of the things that I think Card Factory, the problems that it's been having, is it's trying to get some price increases through and hasn't been, because the discounters have been pushing very, discounting and the price-sensitive supermarkets have been pushing very heavily in that area. Yeah. So, it's possible that that does actually tie into the IG investment story with regard to Card. Even if they don't pay a special dividend, the yield's still nearly going to be, 3.84% well covered, which I think for income punters is still absolutely fine. If they pay one special dividend now every 3 years, the yield is still comfortably north of 6%, even if they might not pay now one every year now. So, but even then, they still might do. So Card took a bit of a battering. It's now bounced back, partly because the CEO bought 60 grand's worth of stock. And I think, that suggested maybe the share price reaction of the day was a little bit overdone. But, if Card is struggling, I'm not totally convinced it is, but certainly IG Design looks to be in a bit of a sweet spot in that particular market at the moment.
Yeah, well, this time 2 years ago, you could have bought them for 130 a share, then now 367 a share. So,
I know, I do slightly, yeah, well, that's my one slight reservation, but it does feel to me like it's got the wind in it. So certainly, if you're a momentum hunter, it's probably the sort of stock that might come on your radar.
Cool, all right, next one is Somero.
Somero, which is one we talked about before, and, it initially went up, and now it's sort of come back a little bit, it's running again now. Don't forget, it's based in Florida, and it's this laser concrete leveling specialist, AIM-quoted company. And to be fair, the recent news flow has been a bit I mean, there was a mixed trading update in June where they talked about the US being a little bit slower than expected because of heavy rain. Well, what have we had there since? And China going a lot more slowly than expected. And in fact, since then, they've announced that a lot of their Chinese sales force have been poached by a competitor. So they're now actually doing a strategic review of their Chinese operations. Now, China's a very small part of the business, but it was a big percentage part of the growth that the company was looking to target. And given that, I guess you can now look at the US situation in one of two ways. It's clearly, Hurricanes Irma and Harvey aren't going to have helped immediate trading because things were pretty slow there anyway. But I guess you could argue, well, there's clearly a massive reconstruction job to be done. Is that going to be good news for them going forwards? I just think short term, the story's just not quite panned out as people are expecting. The first half was solid, in fact, very solid. Sales up 7, pre-tax up 15, dividend up 10. There was a special dividend. It's not particularly expensive, but it's just one of those where the story isn't quite panning out in terms of earnings momentum as you would like to see. So it just does feel to me like it's going to drift a little bit for a while now. But again, patient value hunters might want to tough it out. It's got a great competitive position, but it just feels as if the story's not quite developing as hoped.
Yeah, definitely a correction. And like I said, I had them on the podcast a while back, and I went to their website and checked out their equipment. And it is one of those things, it's boys' toys, like these laser-driven sort of floor levelers. Yes, they're amazing.
Exactly.
But the price has just gone under the 200-day moving average, which is not a good sign.
Doesn't quite feel right for me at the moment, unfortunately, no.
Yeah. Okay, and the last one is Medica.
It's MGP, Medica, which, with main market. It's a recent float back in March. And remember, this is, we've discussed it before, and the shares, have initially done well, and then pull back. And this is the supplier of radiologists. Remember, there's a shortage of radiologists in the NHS, and this company actually provides them to the NHS to fill the gaps. And it's had maiden interims, and they were pretty good. The revenue's up 17, operating profit up 15, net debt came down on the flotation cash from the spring. But the stock did come back because the hiring of radiologists has gone a bit slower than expected. Added 19 to 267 in the first half. their target's at least 300, so they've got to get a little bit of a wiggle on. Remember that they've got three services, Nighthawk, Cross Sections and Plan Film, which provide emergency and less urgent CT scan and CAT scans. And remember, they get paid either by scan or by body part, which I know sounds a little bit a little bit spooky, but that's the way it works. It's a stock for momentum players because it's on nearly 30 times forward earnings. Yeah. And I think the fact that the radiologist hiring program, again, has gone a little bit more slowly than expected is what's just taken some of the heat out of the price. But it still feels to me like it's got a good competitive position, providing a solution to a fairly serious problem. Mm. So, again, patient holders, I think we'll probably keep on with this one and, you know, wait for it to grow into its multiple, I think.
Yeah, what is it, about 30 times for looking at adjusted?
Yeah, it's not cheap. Again, there's no margin for error. So if those radiology hirings don't come through, the earnings forecasts are going to look exposed and the stock's going to start looking an awful lot less happy. And again, that's why they need to prove that they're on plan when it comes to the radiologists' hiring programs. If they can do that, the stock will, you know, deliver the growth people expect. It'll grow into the multiple. If there's a big hiccup, then obviously that's when earnings growth starts to look a little bit exposed. But I think at the moment it's addressing what's clearly a burning need and providing a solution to that.
I think that was over. When I said 30, I was looking at their 6 months results. So, I mean, it's not 30, it's probably half that. But it's one of those groups we said before, it's very niche and you wouldn't think about it. And you think, hang on, these are the kind of businesses you need to seek out because it's obviously a need for them. But like you said, there's a shortage of radiologists. And so you often hear people saying, in this country, we're short of engineers. You never hear, in this country, we're short of radiologists. You never hear that. So it's a very niche area. But something I'm often drawn to is niche areas like this.
Again, because if you've got that competitive position, then you have pricing power, then you've got a chance to obviously bring in and potentially make some pretty decent money.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Russ, good to talk to you. And
lovely to catch up with you. Catch
we'll
you next week.
Speak next week. Cheers, fella.
Have a lovely weekend. Take care now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, the world of virtual reality. EVR Holdings, EVRH, signed another cracking deal. But I want to see them get that app out there, the app, the virtual reality app. I really do. At four, Ascent Resources, AST. At that's always there. At three, it's a new entry. Not been there before. Ex-Sylph, I think it was. Used to be Silver Falcon. But now regenerated into Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceutic. Ticker there's H-E-M-O, by the way. Hemo. At two, Frontera Resources, FRR. Just spoke to Zaza earlier on. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was on the podcast yesterday, Michael Masterman of Safron Energy. That's S-R-O-N. And a very exciting tie-up there with Sound Energy Italy and Po Valley. And obviously they're suspended for now, but coming back with some exciting assets. All right, top five most liked RNSs on the podcast are as follows. At five, Zenith Energy, ZEN, successful perforation of well C21 in Azerbaijan. At two, Motive Bio, new preclinical data for Iclaprim at ID Week 2017. At three, also, Motive Bio, new preclinical data for Iclaprim 2. Number two, second most liked RNS, was from AsiaMet Resources, ARS, BKM Copper Project Feasibility Study Advancing. And number one, most liked RNS, was from Vast Resources, and it was the Manila Extension Finance Update, an effect on possible strategic investment of up to $10 million US dollars. Yeah, dollar. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.